Good day, everyone, and welcome to another edition of The Debate, coming your way from Press TV headquarters in Tehran. I'm Behrouz Najafi. Iran designates U.S. military forces as, quote, terrorists after Washington decides to blacklist the country's Islamic Revolution Guard Corps, a terrorist organization. IRGC has been part and parcel of the Iranian armed forces since the victory of the Islamic Revolution in the country 40 years ago. It helped Iran preserve its territorial integrity when the country was invaded by the former Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein, who received military, financial, and political assistance from the U.S. and its Western and regional allies. IRGC has been instrumental in fighting Daesh and other terrorist groups, wreaking havoc in both Iraq and Syria. Now, Iran saying that a U.S. decision will escalate tensions in this region. In tonight's debate, we'll dissect the reasons behind Washington's hostility toward the Islamic Republic of Iran. Let's first watch a report.
Since U.S. President Donald Trump took office in January 2017, he has left no stone unturned to exert pressure on Iran through sanctions and threats. Trump even showed no scruples about breaching the internationally recognized 2015 nuclear deal to achieve its anti-Iran goals. On Monday, the U.S. president once again put the spotlight on his hostility against Iran and formally designated the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps as a foreign terrorist organization. In a statement, Trump accused the IRGC of financing and promoting terrorism. His Secretary of State also warned global businesses against any dealings with the IRGC.
Businesses and banks around the world now have a clearer duty to ensure that companies with which they conduct financial transactions are not connected to the IRGC in any material way.
Political analysts say the Trump administration has revealed the real face of the U.S. by its move against the IRGC.
This administration, contrary to the other administrations, actually states the reality of what America is and does not try to mask the behavior of America in, you know, nice rhetoric or the language of diplomacy or the language of being friends.
The Israeli premier spared no time to heap praise on the U.S. president for his decision. Benjamin Netanyahu said Trump labeled the IRGC as a terror group at his request. In a retaliatory move, Iran's top security council designated the U.S. Central Command in the region, known as CENTCOM, as a terrorist group. Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif described the U.S. measure a misadventure in the region and a misguided election eve gift to the Israeli premier. The U.S. argues that the IRGC promotes terrorism while the Defense Force played a key role in defeating Daesh terrorists in Syria and Iraq by providing advisory support to the two Arab nations. Trump's decision marks the first time the U.S. has formally labeled another country's military a terrorist group. The Pentagon and U.S. intelligence agencies have already raised concerns about the impact Trump's decision may incur. Whatever the consequences, it could give a green light to terror groups such as Daesh to once again raise their ugly head in the region.
Now, allow me to introduce our guests who will be discussing this issue. We'll have historian and journalist Fresh Junkers joining us from Belgium, and also editor of Veterans Today, Kevin Barrett from Madison. Now, starting with Brecht, how do you size up the latest anti-Iran move by the United States? What are the reasons and motives behind it?
Well, I think that when you see Benjamin Netanyahu saying that that Trump did this move on his advice, so to say, I think that shows very clearly what it is, what is actually going on here. Of course, the argument could be made that Netanyahu is trying to overstate his own importance because tomorrow, of course, is the elections in Israel, the Knesset elections. But I think it's quite important to realize that the Zionist entity has had an extremely important and very pivotal influence on the Trump administration ever since it took office in 2017. So when you see the breaking of the nuclear deal by Donald Trump, when you see the fact that he has been putting more pressure on Iran than any other government has done before him. You know, this is worse than under Bush, worse than under Reagan and other neoconservative war hawks that have been ruling the United States in the past. And now, of course, this the designation, the absolutely mind-boggling designation of a sovereign nation's military force as a so-called foreign terrorist organization, it is nothing but a present that he is giving on a silver platter to the Israelis, as well as to the Wahhabis in the Wahhabi terrorist and other Takfiri movements in the Middle East. So I think Trump is in fact, like was said in the report just now, he is completely wiping off all the nice clean facade of U.S. imperialism and just going straight to the goal that the United States is trying to achieve, which is complete hegemony over the region.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Madison now. Kevin, this is the first time that another country's military is labeled as a terrorist group. That's what also Brecht referred to. What's your reading of the underlying reasons for this?
Well, this is carrying the real meaning of the way the word terrorism is being used these days to its absurd conclusion. You know, the word terrorism actually refers to a military tactic, which is intentionally targeting the civilians of one's own country or another country for political purposes. And it has been used repeatedly throughout history in warfare. Mm-hmm. The American Civil War included vast amounts of terrorism against the people of the South by General Sherman, and I could go on. But since the September 11th false flag mind control operation that was masterminded by neoconservative Zionists, we've seen the word terrorism becoming a kind of empty, meaningless smear that is simply applied to try to demonize one's enemies. And in this case, it's reached the absurd level of calling the leading anti-terror force in the region and perhaps on the planet a terrorist group. The IRGC does not intentionally target civilians. It never has. It's not part of its mission. The U.S. military does, with mm-hmm. drone strikes that take out wedding parties and so on, but the IRGC doesn't. So what does this mean? Well, ultimately, 9/11 was orchestrated by neoconservative Zionists who wanted to demonize their enemies. And they consider their enemies terrorists. So the problem with the IRGC is not that it's actually terrorist. The problem, according to Trump and his puppet master in Tel Aviv, Benjamin Netanyahu, and his paymaster in Las Vegas, the godfather, Sheldon Adelson, the problem is that the IRGC actually fights against terrorism. And the two worst terrorist groups in the Middle East are the Takfiris and the Zionists, both of whom systematically target civilians in the most hideous and cruel ways. Mm. The Zionists rain down white phosphorus on women and children. They target hospitals. They target ambulances. They target UN installations. They systematically massacre children. They have their snipers intentionally barking out insults over loudspeakers to lure children within sight of their guns so they can shoot children dead for sport. They do that systematically as a matter of de facto Israeli government policy. They are terrorists. And likewise, the Takfiris of Saudi Arabia are no better. The IRGC has been standing up against these terrorists firmly, and for that reason, Trump and his boss, Netanyahu, are calling it a terrorist group. It's a joke, and it's a scandal. It's an outrage. If the American people understood what was going on, they would storm the White House and burn it down.
Now, Brecht, Iran says that a U.S. move is a reaction to Tehran's growing influence in this part of the world, which comes despite the U.S. pressure. And Iran also says fight against Daesh terrorist group has been a success. So why has the U.S. failed to curb Iran's influence?
Because the United States only understands the language of force. They are just like the Israelis do. So they believe, the U.S. has often believed that they can just force the Middle East, the Arab people, the Islamic people of the Middle East to do what they want, what the United States wants, by just bombing them into submission. And this has backfired tremendously, especially when you see in Iraq they're trying to put tremendous pressure nowadays on Iraq, but they could not prevent, you know, these mutual, very cordial relationships between Iraq and Iran. For example, recently the visit of the Iraqi president to the Islamic Republic of Iran, So I believe what Iran has done, on the contrary, Iran has shown that they can, that they are a reliable partner in the struggle against terrorism. It is Iran that has sent forces, of, for example, the Al-Quds force of the Islamic Guards, the Islamic Revolutionary Guards of Iran. They have gone into Iraq, they have gone into Syria, and in both these cases, they only went there after getting explicit permission from the government of both Iraq and Syria. And they have been fighting the enemies of Iraq and Syria in their nation without demanding anything in return. This is a form of solidarity that in the long run has paid off much more than the American system of military hegemony ever has. Of course, the United States has its own puppet governments all over the Middle East and all over the world, and the United States has its massive military industrial complex and apparatus at its disposal to bomb nations, to attack countries, and to pretend like they're doing now still in northern Syria with the so-called Syrian Democratic Forces, where the Americans pretend that they are involved in combating terrorism, but de facto, when you look at the situation on the ground, nothing is improving, really. This is the only thing the United States can do, but when it comes to actually convincing the people, the Islamic Republic of Iran has done a way better job here. For example, the Al-Quds Force commander, General Qasem Soleimani, the United States itself, in some of its most important military analysts, have stated that General Soleimani could theoretically go aboard a car in Tehran and drive all the way to the border between Lebanon and Israel, mm-hmm. without anyone stopping him on the way, because all the nations he passes, Iraq and Lebanon, of course, and Syria, these nations there, the people there, they will welcome him as one of the heroes that helped him liberate their nation. So that is right. The key point in which Iran has been able to achieve such a massive, tremendous success and popularity among the Arab states in the Middle East.
Mm. And of course, President Trump complains that the U.S. has spent $7 trillion in Iraq and they have to turn off their lights when they fly there. Now, Kevin, the Pentagon and the U.S. intelligence agencies have raised concerns about this Trump decision. So why isn't Mr. Trump, he's disregarding these concerns? Maybe he's got other sources better than his own intelligence people?
That's a great question. And he's doing it for exactly the same reason that President Harry Truman chose to disregard the very strong advice of his entire State Department, his entire military, and every single one of his advisors in 1948. They were telling him, do not recognize the so-called State of Israel. This will drag us down into an endless problem. But Harry Truman went ahead and did it unilaterally. Why? Because his friend, a Jewish mafia boss from his hometown in Missouri, handed him $2 million in cash in a suitcase. That is the story told by John F. Kennedy and recorded by Gore Vidal. Well, today we have the same issue of ethnically Jewish organized crime, which is loyal to their organized crime base in the State of Israel, buying politicians here in the United States. Sheldon Adelson is today's version of that gangster who handed Harry Truman $2 million in cash in a suitcase. Sheldon Adelson donated something like $70 million to Trump's campaign. And so he bought Donald Trump. He owns Donald Trump. And I disagree with the other guests. This is not about U.S. hegemony in the Middle East. This is about Israeli hegemony, not only in the Middle East, but in the United States of America. Ilhan Omar understated the case when she said it was about the Benjamins. Organized crime, Jewish, ethnic, Zionist, organized crime dollars has totally bought up the United States. It owns our entire media. It owns most of our financial system. And it now owns the White House. And it is forcing our pathetic president to dance to the tune of the Zionist fiddler on the roof and obey every idiotic order coming from Benjamin Netanyahu, even if all of his own advisors tell him not to do it. Again, I say if the American people knew what was going on, they would stage a second American Revolution in an instant.
Okay. Now, Bresh, speaking of the Israeli Prime Minister, you know, Benjamin Netanyahu was quick to heap praise on Trump, saying that it was his proposal, his request. And how do you see Israel's role in the U.S. anti-Iran policies?
I do believe that Israel has an extremely important and even pivotal role in determining the U.S. agenda. Of course, it's always difficult to determine who is the boss over whom. That is a research matter in which I am not entirely specialized. But it's definitely true that the two of them, the two bases, primary bases of imperialism in the world nowadays, lay in the United States in one point and in Israel and Tel Aviv in the other. And that these two nations have extensive ties to one another. It is true that, for example, under the Obama administration, there were numerous complaints being heard in Israel that said that the White House was not compliant enough to Israeli demands and Israeli demands for support and for their plans for further colonization and destruction of Palestine and of the greater Middle East in general. And when you see now that Donald Trump, who of course, as we all know, and is a person who has a tendency to say one thing and do something else, which does not exactly prove his mental, let's say, capacity or consistency very well, it says a lot about him. When you see this, while at the same time a very competent, we must say, a very evil but very competent statesman such as Benjamin Netanyahu, I'm quite certain that he can play the White House in such a way. And that is, I think, why we have seen that in the past 2 years since the ascension of Donald Trump to the White House, there has been a massive speed up of Zionist colonization plans in the Middle East. We have seen the official signing away of the Golan Heights by the United States. We have seen massive support now by the United States to military and financial support to Israel. And now we see this increased pressure on being put on the Islamic Republic of Iran. At the same time, of course, the added to that is the support that Donald Trump keeps on giving to the Saudi war against Yemen, which seems unrelated, but if you know the very radical and very consistent anti-Zionist approach that the Yemeni people, especially the National Salvation Government and the Ansar Allah movement have, the very anti-Zionist position they have towards Israel, this explains why Donald Trump is so adamant in ignoring the entire House of Representatives and keeping on supporting the Saudi war, which is also, of course, backed by Israel, the Saudi war against Yemen. And I believe that in the near future, it is very likely, especially if Netanyahu wins tomorrow, wins the elections. Netanyahu already said that he wants to go ahead and completely colonize and annex the West Bank of the Jordan River, so completely get rid of everything that is still called Palestine. And I am absolutely certain that within the coming few months, if Netanyahu wins, you will see an official declaration coming from the White House in which Donald Trump will officially recognize the West Bank as a part of Israel.
Yep.
This is
naturally.
This shows that the United States is losing the little part, the little resistance it wanted to show here and there still in the past decades against Israel, and is completely giving in to everything the Israelis are doing nowadays. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let me now ask Kevin, after President Trump decided to designate the IRGC as a terrorist organization, U.S. Special Representative for Iran, Brian Hook, published an article in New York Times, and I'm quoting him. He said that Iran should reconcile with America. Does Iran have good reasons to ignore Brian Hook's offer?
Brian Hook, I don't know where he came from. But these lunatics that Sheldon Adelson, through his puppet Donald Trump, have installed in these positions are completely out of their minds. If they think that the way that Iran is going to reconcile to the United States is by rolling over and allowing Sheldon Adelson and Benjamin Netanyahu and their bought and paid errand boy Donald Trump to install the MEK, one of the world's worst terror groups, in power in Tehran, because that's ultimately what he's saying. You know, these guys are all on the payroll of the MEK. Pompeo and Bolton take $25,000 for a half-hour speech to the MEK repeatedly. So these are the kind of people that think that they can tell Iran what to do and push Iran around. And so when this idiot Hook publishes this nonsense in the New York Times, trying to make it sound like, oh, we're on the side of the real Iranian people, the young Iranian people who want to watch porn on TV and hate mosques and hate Islam and want to live in Los Angeles, that kind of propaganda is hardly going to work on the people of Iran when they know that they're facing a psychotic American administration that's totally owned by the worst element of Israeli-based Zionist organized crime and that wants to install the MEK terrorists in power in Tehran. Obama was a public relations genius and a strategic genius compared to these cretins. And that's why every single one of Trump's advisors, just like Harry Truman's advisors in 1948, said, don't do this. But Trump isn't listening because he's getting those suitcases full of cash from Russian-Israeli organized crime. The Trump-Russia scandal is about Trump being owned by Russian Zionist organized crime. The Mike Flynn crime was being an agent of Israel trying to torpedo Obama's policy on the JCPOA. So I think the American government still may rise up and stage a coup d'etat against Zionist control of the Trump administration, and that day can't come soon enough as far as I'm concerned.
Now, Bresch, another part of what Brian Hook wrote in the New York Times article, he said that isn't it time to abandon the policies that have kept the people of Iran and the United States apart since 1979? I mean, with such U.S. policies and antagonism, what does he mean by that?
I am not entirely certain what Brian Hook meant by that, but by the concept itself of isn't it time to move beyond those policies, obviously I completely agree, but that means the policies that are keeping Iran and the United States apart is indeed this imperialist policy that is being pushed by the Americans and also by the Israelis, and has made, they are the ones who have made Iran into like a sort of demonized, vilified enemy ever since the revolution of 1979. And the only reason why they do that is because Iran has had the audacity and the guts to chart its own course and to sail its own national the course of its own national sovereignty as an Islamic republic, instead of the puppet regime that was in the absolute monarchy under the Shah and the Pahlavi dynasty. So I think that when it comes to the very sort of liberal sounding, it's a very the idea that, you know, can't we just all get along, is very, it's very naive if Iran has to deal with a nation like the United States with these imperialist policies. It is important to note that Iran is not, you know, intending to destroy the United States by itself. Iran is also not intending to destroy the Jewish people, no matter how often Netanyahu tries to tell us that is what the Iranians are planning. And I believe it is what is important. If you see the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Marja Ali Khamenei, back in 2015, when the JCPOA was signed, where the nuclear deal was signed, he stated that, you know, we cannot trust the United States. We cannot trust this nation, these people, to keep up their end of the bargain. So he said, okay, good, it's great that we signed it, and it's definitely Rouhani did, President Rouhani did a good job in achieving it, but this has proven that, you know, the United States can always, it will always change its course whenever they feel it's in their best interest or in the best interest of the Zionists in Tel Aviv. So it is important indeed to know that Iran cannot trust the United States and definitely cannot trust Israel. And I think the Iranians definitely know that, and that is one of the reasons why they will always have this very healthy skepticism towards anyone who says, can't we just get along, let's all come together and work something out.
Exactly. Okay, on that note, we come to the end of this edition of the Debate on Press TV. Let me thank our guests who joined us in this discussion. We had historian and journalist Bresch Jonkers from Belgium, and editor of Veterans Today, Kevin Baer, who joined us out of Madison. And thank you for watching this debate. We'll see you next time.